Welcome to episode 164 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a show about how Latinx pop culture is reshaping mainstream entertainment. I'm your host, Jack Rico, and we continue my retrospective series for Hispanic Heritage Month, where I revisit with you my favorite interviews of the last 5 years. On this third episode of our series, I talk to the very beloved actress-producer Aubrey Plaza, who has become a star comedian and a cult indie film queen since her big break as April Ludgate on NBC's Parks and Recreation. Since then, she's become a film actress, and she's done popular films such as Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, and the Child's Play reboot. She's now coming off of a dramedy with Michael Caine called Bestsellers. She's also currently working with Jason Statham on the action thriller Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, and is gearing up for Hulu's comedy, Olga Dies Dreaming. In this interview from November 26, 2020, close to Thanksgiving last year, Aubrey and I discussed her recent comedic psychological thriller, Black Bear. We also touched upon her interest in producing Latinx content and why breaking Latina stereotypes is a priority for her. But before I talk to Aubrey, it's time I give you my weekly recap of the top Latinx pop culture headlines in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie, TV, music, news of the week. Latin Grammy nominations are in. Colombian artist Camilo leads all nominees with 10 nominations, and Spaniard Si Tangana with 5. Queen of the South showrunner Dailene Rodriguez is developing a Tropicana Night series. Diego Luna has finished production of Star Wars Andor. Daddy Yankee signs with William Morris and Endeavor. Entertainment One boards Spanish language submarine drama Operación Marea Negra. The Tony Awards on CBS had an all-time historic low rating of 2.6 million households. Geraldo Rivera inks a new multi-year deal with Fox News. Lights, Camera, Acción, a TV celebration of the incredible impact Latinos have made in Hollywood, will premiere Tuesday, October 5th on PBS. MasterChef Latinos on Estrella TV will return in 2022, and CBS's Magnum PI adds actor Martin Martinez to its season 4 cast. And in tech and social media news, TikTok hits 1 billion monthly users worldwide. Instagram to temporarily suspend development of an app for kids. Google Lens will soon search for words and images combined. Snapchat is seeing a resurgence in India. Instagram Reels are now widely available on Facebook. Amazon Echo will include Hey Disney as a custom voice assistant in 2022. And new augmented reality sunglasses from Unreal are made for binge-watching TV. First of all, what a pleasure to meet you.
You too. Nice to meet you, Jack.
Had a chance to catch this film, Black Bear, and I have to say, what a trippy movie this movie was for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching it for the first 20, 30 minutes, and all of a sudden, I got into cruise control with the film, thinking I exactly knew what this movie was all about.
Right.
And I was waiting for the development, the fleshing out of that storyline that I think some people in our... You know, these are the types of things that you don't want to experience, but you wouldn't mind watching. And then all of a sudden, flip. So explain and describe this movie to me from your perspective.
It's, man, it's probably one of the hardest films I've ever had to explain. But I would say that in an overall sense, it's kind of it's about a filmmaker named Allison, played by me, who has arrived at this lake house in the middle of nowhere on some kind of creative exploration. She's got writer's block and she's trying to figure out what to write about, and she meets this married couple that are clearly going through having some marital problems, and she becomes entangled in this kind of toxic dynamic that they have and that she ends up adding on to. And it escalates to a point that you can't even believe. And then there's a very, very insane turn in the film where all of a sudden these characters become entirely different characters and they're now shooting a movie on the same property. Now, I don't know if this is a spoiler, so I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say all this stuff.
Probably not, Aubrey.
Okay. So, mommy? So then these characters become these come these completely different characters. And then the film is just kind of turned slightly off its head, and it becomes an entirely new exploration of the same themes, but in a different kind of context. And the way that I kind of describe it to my close friends and family is it's kind of like two nightmares interwoven to make one mega nightmare.
Wow.
Yes. And it's kind of, you know, for me, it's almost an unconscious kind of exploration of the creative process and how toxic it can be when you're working intimately with a loved one and trying to create art at the same time, and how complicated that can be.
Do you believe that to be true to life too?
Yes. And you know, I think that's part of why the reason the movie exists, because Larry, Lawrence Lamid, and I had a lot of conversations about what it's like to shoot a movie with your partner. Both of us are involved with filmmakers, so we have a lot to say on that matter. And I think it's just a really interesting thing to explore. And I think that's kind of what inspired him to write it.
Now, you're a producer in this film. What was it like producing it, or do you usually produce films?
I have produced a couple films. I believe this is my third film.
Is it easy? Is it hard? Is it something that you continually want to do?
It depends on the project. I don't necessarily need to produce every movie I'm in, but I would say that, you know, this movie is a miracle movie that it even got made. You know, it's really hard to find financing for such a small artistic script that, you know, isn't so obvious, isn't so marketable, all of those things. So adding myself as a producer will only give us a better chance to get it in front of people. So I think that it's valuable for me in that sense. And then creatively, it's just really rewarding to be able to be involved in the process even after the shoot and have my opinion matter, you know, and have a really big effect on the end result, which is something that I find really rewarding.
How do you give such a great performance that you did here? Because you look like you really tapped into a wide range of emotions here. And then to have to then produce, because everything I've been hearing about producing is that you're involved in the film in many of the decision-making. So is that good for the acting?
It's interesting. I don't know. I think that it really works for me because there are other producers involved. So when I show up to set and it's my, you know, it's my scene and I have to act, then I'm totally an actor and I'm able to kind of switch hats in that way and just focus on acting. But it's exhausting. I would say just it adds another level of anxiety, because when we wrap for the day, then all of a sudden I go like, all right, I'm not an actor anymore. Now I'm a producer. Now I'm going to think about tomorrow and think about how to solve all these problems that have come up today. But normally I surround myself with people that I trust, so I don't have to shoulder that all on my own. So I can focus on the acting, but I would say I'm always, even as an actor on set, I'm always kind of conscious of just the culture of the set and how people are being treated, things like that. And I think that part of my brain, producer brain, I can't really turn off. And I don't know if it affects my performance or not, but I don't really care.
There was a portion in the film where one of the characters was asking if you were joking or not. And it was a very emotional, crucial part of the film. She goes, I don't even know if you're joking or not. Are you serious or not? And I felt that that's what a lot of people have, like a perception of you in your films. Like they're like, you're slowly having these films where that's an Aubrey Plaza film. Mm-hmm. Like it has its own stamp of humor, of intellect. You know what you're getting in an Aubrey Plaza film. Do you feel you're giving viewers an Aubrey Plaza film, or are you stretching yourself out here to change those perceptions?
I don't know. I mean, I think that this film was written for me, and in a lot of ways, I think that it's an attempt to kind of deconstruct this persona that people associate me with. It's not something I ever anticipated when I set out to become an actor. You know, I can't control the parts that I get, and you know how heavily people associate me with those parts. But I would say this movie, more than probably any movie I've done, I would hope would show people that there's a lot more to me than maybe they think.
Is that something you want to prove? Or did you read a review of a film, an essay on you or something, where you said, you know what, I'm going to prove these guys wrong. I'm going to prove them that there's 30 sides to me, not just the one that they keep on focusing on.
I mean, look, I'd love to say that I don't care what people think about me, and I really don't in a lot of ways. But of course, there's that part of me that wants to prove something, that wants, you know, wants respect. I demand respect, okay? And I want it now. But you know, I can't live my life, you know, trying to, you know, prove people wrong about me. I don't give a shit, but it's more fulfilling for me to do things different, to do something different every time. I'm not interested in doing the same thing. And I know that I'm not, that I'm more than April Ludgate. And if people don't see that, then they can, you know, go watch Parks and Rec and whatever on Netflix and be happy. I don't care.
Right. When was this movie shot?
It was shot in the Adirondacks, a couple hours north of Albany, in this very isolated, like, lake town, in the woods.
What was the experience of shooting that film there? Did you enjoy yourself, or was it challenging?
It was challenging. It was very, very beautiful setting. The lake was gorgeous, and the house was beautiful. It was an idyllic setting for a vacation. Mm-hmm. For a movie shoot, not so much. You know, we didn't anticipate how many problems we were going to have on this isolated location. In, for example, we had, you know, we didn't have a backup generator, so we lost power all hours of the day and night.
Producer, really, what do we do?
Oh yeah. Well, we get another backup generator, and then we find out that the car carrying the backup generator has broken down on the highway. I mean, it's literally just disaster after disaster.
Right.
So we were battling out there. It felt like we were battling every day. The elements, the rain, the bugs, the just everything.
So we just recently found out that Wonder Woman 1984 is going to be streaming on HBO Max. It's going to be going out in theaters, but simultaneously going out there. And I had written on Twitter that this just seems to confirm the demise of at least the way we used to know movie theaters and the movie theater going experience. Are you starting to notice that the content you're going to continue to create might just be seen on a television or on a phone?
I think I'm a little more optimistic than you. I wouldn't confirm the demise of the big screen just yet. You know, I would hesitate to do that, because I think the experience of seeing a movie on a big screen is not just about the size of the screen. It's about the communal experience, and it's about seeing a piece of art in a group. It's how societies evolve, you know. It's a collective experience, a collective memory that we all share, and it's something that connects us all as human beings. And I think that most people feel that way about going to the movie theaters, even if they can't articulate why. It's important. It's way more important than I think people even realize. So I think that I'm hopeful that that we'll get out of this, you know, phase of no movie theaters being open, and we'll get back to a place where people can go back and see movies on the big screen. But that being said, of course, times are changing, things are streaming and all that stuff. So, you know, it's fine. Gotta put it on HBO Max, go for it. But I wouldn't change my mode of, you know, creating content based on, you know, the fear that, you know, things have changed forever, because I just don't think that's true. And I just went to the drive-in premiere of Happiest Season, and it was awesome, and it reminded me, like, oh, you know, it was like a time traveling moment where I looked around and I went, like, it's honestly, it's like we're in the 50s or something. You know, people used to do this, Yeah, like people used to roll up to the drive-in movie theater. It was very romantic, you know? I think the world kind of goes in cycles like that. So I can't say what will happen, but I'm not giving up on the big screen.
Has the experiences of 2020 in any way changed you as a storyteller with the types of stories you want to be able to tell now?
It's definitely kind of brought me back to a place, to almost like a, you know, the film student kind of version of myself, because I think limitations are really good for art. You know, when we can't, you know, conduct ourselves like we normally do and create things like we normally do, we have to think outside of the box, we have to get creative, and we have to problem solve. And I think all of these things are really, really good for generating art. So I would say that one thing I've thought about a lot in the past couple months are kind of like, how do you tell an intimate story from far away? It has made me think about filmmaking in a different way, and whether I'm conscious of it or not, like I definitely think it's going to infuse itself into the stories that I want to tell.
Final question, just shifting gears here for a second. I'm Colombian American, and this podcast that we're doing is a Latinx pop culture podcast. And for a long time, I've been hearing that you are Hispanic, Latina, Puerto Rican. Yeah. But I don't hear you talk that much about it, so I don't know too much about it. I kind of wanted to take the time to kind of ask you. I know your mom is Irish, I believe, and your dad's Puerto Rican from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
How do you identify when someone wants to know where you're from? Do you say you're Irish? Do you say you're Puerto Rican? Do you say I'm American? Or do you not have a denomination of identity?
Honestly, the first thing I usually say is I'm half Puerto Rican. The Puerto Rican part is usually the thing I lead with, because just culturally, I think that's how I grew up. Like I identify with my Puerto Rican family probably more than anything else. I am half Irish. My mom's Irish, but my mom was also adopted by an Irish Catholic family. So I grew up kind of partially with this Irish Catholic family, not blood related to me. And I love them. They're my family too. But the Puerto Rican side of my family, I guess, felt a little more like, you know, that just was like home for me. So I'm half, but I'm still, you know, Puerto Rican. Both my grandparents are from Puerto Rico. I've still have family there and cousins there, and have a huge family, obviously. So like, tons of cousins in Philly, and we salsa dance in the kitchen. You know, I don't know.
Do you speak Spanish, Aubrey?
I do, but I'm not fluent, and I blame my father and I blame my grandfather for that, because my dad's not fluent either. Weirdly, some of my aunts and uncles are, but my dad just, it didn't take to him. And my grandfather, who when I was growing up was a police officer in Philadelphia, but he came from Puerto Rico. I mean, you know, it was like classic story where he like, you know, literally just like got on a boat and like hid in the boat kind of style, like to get to New York or whatever. And he was very, very, very disciplined about them speaking English as their first language growing up. So that's how he was. And he didn't want them to speak Spanish. He wanted them to speak English. And so, you know, how that goes. And so my dad never really, he never really taught, you know, he didn't teach me or anything, but it's my fault. But my family speaks Spanish, and my, you know, when I'm around them, it's like, they'll speak Spanish to me, but I'm not as confident. So I always respond in English, but.
Recently, we were talking to a bunch of friends of mine about the lack of Latinx content anywhere. Like, you kind of just don't really see it. And there's a lot of image representation issues that I think a lot of people are now very clear about. Has there ever been a desire for you to explore maybe that part of your Puerto Rican culture and to be able to tell those stories maybe through film, curiosity, inquisitiveness about that side, and create content that kind of reflects those questions, that curiosity about your Puerto Rican side? Because an Aubrey Plaza Latinx film is something we all definitely need to see.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to do that. I'm going to do that for sure. I'm doing that. I think like in my own way, it's like, I try to, you know, like April Ludgate on Parks and Rec, it's like, I was very adamant about going like, look, maybe she's half Cuban, you know, I don't know, maybe her mom's Cuban, maybe whatever. And they're like, great idea. But obviously it wasn't about that. But I think in my own way, I feel like I try to portray Hispanic characters that aren't the stereotypes, because I think that's one thing that we're really up against, especially like Latino women. It's like, there's such a stereotype there, and there are so many different kinds of Hispanic women and people that we just don't even see. Like, they're not represented on film or on television. It's just the same kind of like archetypes over and over again. And so absolutely, I will do that. And I also think that for me personally, there is something really interesting about being half Hispanic, because it's like, you know, people judge you like by the color of your skin. It's like, sorry, like just because I have my mom's like Irish complexion or whatever, it's like, there's an interesting kind of like identity crisis that like, I think I have always had and struggled with my whole life. Cause I grew up in a very conservative, like Irish Catholic community in Delaware. You know, but that's not really like who I am. So, and I was always considered kind of like the diverse one, but people were always like, but you're white. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not. So So I think there's a lot of things that I have to say about it. And, I would love to do more Latinx stories and promote that representation in the industry, because, we got a long way to go.
Just before I wrap up here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Rompelo, Sima Funk featuring Lupe Fiasco. Innovator, viva la imitators, meet the leader, eat a beater, don't need a pepina. En la ciudad de la furia, Aterciopelados. Donde nadie sabe de mí, y yo soy parte de... Mueve tu cuerpo lento, 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 lento. Que la vida es un momento, que la vida es un momento. Lento, Bomba Estéreo. That's it for episode 164 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. If you like this episode, please share with your friends and have them subscribe and leave a review. You'd be helping us reach many more people. If you'd like to get in touch with me, reach me out on Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. Next week, we revisit my interview with Mexican-American director Robert Rodriguez. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.